My name's Kevin Davis, and welcome to this, the Christmas edition of Politics Kingston. The date is Christmas is fast approaching, and a new year beckons as well. There's not been a lot of activity in the council this week, so we're going to do something special this week, which is to invite Councillor Gaj Wolupalai, although I say councillor, he no longer is a councillor as it happens. Gaj was a member of the council for some time and also deputy leader of the council at one point. Had a varied career and background, born and brought up in Kingston. He's worked for the Conservative Party on mayoral campaigns in London, so has a wide amount of experience, and he's going to give us some reflections on what it was like to be a councillor, what it was like to be in the council, and now looking forward, what's going to happen in possibly London mayoral elections. So that's our edition for this week, so let's crack on and hear from Gaj. Gaj, thanks for joining us. You were a councillor in Kingston for...
6 years.
Six glorious years. And you were my deputy leader for...
About 18 months.
Was it 18 months or 2 years? I can't really remember that. So you're not a councillor now. You've rather than be executed at the last election, you voluntarily stood down.
I did, yes.
So your 6 years as a councillor, what do you think about it now, looking back? What's your reflections on it?
I guess I split it into two bits. I got selected and elected at the end of, I guess if you're excluding your period of no overall control, almost 18 years of Lib Dem. Was it 18 years or 20?
It would have been,
18 years, yeah, from 86, isn't it? No, it's 28 years, was it?
It's complicated. So the no overall control ended in 2002. So the last time we actually had control would have been 1998.
Fine, yeah. So a fairly long time.
Yeah.
Out of power. And I think I came into a group that I think was split. There were a handful of people who were eager to get back in power. And there's a decent chunk of people who, A, had an experience running a local authority, and were maybe less geared up for being ambitious about what you do once you run an administration, which I think was probably the single largest challenge that you had as leader and I had as deputy leader when we took over in 2014, which was we had a lot to do, and in doing it, we would upset and disappoint a number of people in Kingston who are highly engaged in Kingston public life. And I don't necessarily know if all our councillors were ready to be unpopular. And when I say unpopular, not actually unpopular.
I think that's right.
Shouted at meetings.
Yeah, exactly.
By people who turn up to shout at meetings anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Funny enough, I do remember the very first group meeting after that 2014 election when I was very clear with everybody that we will upset some people because you can't run a council. You can't take decisions unless you're going to upset people, because that's the nature of it. And if we're going to run around trying to keep everybody happy all the time, then we're not going to get very far.
Well, yeah, I think that was the fundamental, I think, split in our group, which was there was a chunk of us, and I guess include myself and you in that chunk, who were quite determined to take decisions, to argue them out, and there were some pretty heated arguments in group about those decisions, but essentially to deliver some transformation to Kingston, which I think had been less, at least a bit lacklustre by the end of the Lib Dem administration. And that was, and there were people who were unwilling to sacrifice popularity. Well, they were willing to just not do much if it meant they were going to get shouted at meetings, which I don't think necessarily is reflective of how all Kingston residents feel. So I think that was always the biggest challenge we had. So the first 2 years were...
So it's quite... It's that point you make about it's not how all Kingston residents feel. I mean, that is quite a challenge, isn't it? Always of these things. And I'm sure the Lib Dem administration now has this, that your group tends to form a bubble of sort of issues which you're all trapped inside, when there's a whole bunch of stuff going on outside with people ignoring it. I mean, they're not They're not really
yeah, well,
cheap.
Well, I became, I feel like, one of those hated figures in our sort of cabinet when I used to ask people when they'd say residents have told me to forward on the correspondence or screenshot it. And obviously, very rarely would residents actually be telling our councillors stuff. It'd be only a handful of people that would whinge about something. And that sort of like sways their opinion completely on an issue. And I think that was the biggest mistake. I think that's from a party perspective, the biggest mistake during candidate selection is not telling people what it's actually like being councillor. And there's a mistake that I made as well. Like, I had a...
You also came in a by-election.
I did, yes. I replaced David Edwards.
Right.
I had a view of what local government was, but it's totally out of kilter with what local government actually is. I came in with sort of ambitions of, you know, exciting debates and instant transformation. And I think my first ever... Well, the first meeting, my first memories of being a councillor was sitting in a Morden and Coombs neighbourhood meeting or planning subcommittee meeting, and there being about a 30-minute discussion about pigeon poo, where the bridge where the pigeons were on was a network rail bridge, the road was a TfL road, and the pavements were managed by the local authority. And we were trying to ascertain as to who was responsible for cleaning up the shit. and I was sitting there. I remember sitting next to, I think I was sitting next to Howard. Howard Jones, a former leader. And I remember looking at him being like, that's not what I signed up for, mate.
What's even funnier about that is you say you wanted to come in and get things done. Was, of course, that bridge, if it's the bridge I'm thinking about, took 6 years to get network around to clean it up.
It was bewildering stuff. And I think that was, for me, that's the thing I do not miss about council. I do not miss some of the tittle-tattle and the small, I guess, sort of myopic approach to everything.
Yeah.
It's just very sort of like, let's just work out how to get through this year. Obviously, when you talk about budgets, I'm so glad I don't have to talk about council budgets, but like, it's the constant sort of salami slicing that there's... that you have in departments, as opposed to sort of reimagining of service delivery, the collaboration with other local authorities or other entities that help deliver different services. Like, that's where I think where the action is. And I guess, to be fair, the Lib Dems, with the majority that they have, they can engage in some of the most transformative agenda in local authority, and they've got, you know, such an engaged electorate. This is an opportunity to really make it, really do something special in Kingston, and obviously you'll have a better idea of whether that's happening.
Yeah, well, I have my views about that. Do you miss anything about being a councillor?
I miss the people.
Yeah, okay.
I miss the people. Some of the people. I think I was lucky to.
Is that sort of Disraeli, the people, or do you just mean the people
know?
The
people I know in this case.
I miss the people.
I don't miss those people. I think. There are a few councillors that I really respected and enjoyed working with. Some who passed away, like Howard, and then you've got a handful of councillors when I first got elected who stood down in 14. It's Dennis Doe. I remember thinking this guy's got enormous brain, make a real contribution, really interesting. He actually gave me his the hats that we're meant to wear.
I don't know what they're called. They're not called tricorn. Hornblower hats. Yeah.
He gave me his hornblower hat when he retired. Yeah. And was like, I think he'd love this. I think it's also because I've got a massive head as well. So it's actually a clean fit. And then also you have the other councillors who are not necessarily of the Tory mould, like the Lynn Finities.
Yeah.
Who are, I think the Lib Dems have this challenge as well, where the Conservative Party has the same challenge for all broad church. So you've got, I think, people like myself who are sort of like small C conservative, pragmatic, practical, want to get stuff done, are happy to build consensus, even cross party on things. You've got our sort of like red meat Thatcherite Tories who have a view of local government and how to run administration. And then you have, I think, people like Lynn who are like community champions.
Yeah.
Who aren't necessarily conservatives in the, I think, closer to me than the sort of red meat Tories, and having more of those people in group, I think, is a good thing from a quality of debate. Like, the quality of debate in our group meetings far exceeded anything in local council. Mm. There wasn't a single debate on a single substantive issue in local council with the Lib Dems, which was better than the robust debate that would take place in group. There'd be people in group who would make far more persuasive debates against things that the council was doing than the Lib Dems did on every single issue, which I think is a reflection of what I became totally disillusioned with the manner in which we run a local council. Like, full council's a joke. It's embarrassment. With the exception of state of the borough, there's almost nothing.
Okay, let's come on to that in just a minute. So, Gad, you started to talk earlier about the council and about the opportunities that are here and the way the council is run. I mean, what now are your reflections on that, and also what happened in the past 4 years?
I think the council, as a body that takes decisions on behalf of the public by elected people in order to deliver transformation or continued service delivery, is probably about as inefficient as it's capable of being, in so much that the time it takes to get stuff done is absolutely unacceptable in a sort of on-demand led economy transformation that you're seeing in the expectation of service delivery. So if I want to, like, talk about Uber, I want to get a cab home.
Yeah.
Like, it happens immediately. Nothing in local government happens immediately.
Far from it.
And yeah, so I think the problem that I have, and I think the committee system is, I made this point, I think, during one of our group meetings, I think it's a disgrace in terms of how long it takes stuff to get done. I think I was the only person in the group that I was advocating for it to be an elected, directly elected mayor and get rid of all councillors, which obviously went down pretty badly in a room full of councillors.
Yes, I gather there's somebody in the community that's pushing that idea at the moment.
Oh, really?
Actually, yeah, looking to have a balance to take us to it.
I think just get stuff done.
Yeah.
And if people aren't happy with the stuff that you want to get done, then do get done and get rid of them. Mm. But at the moment, change is, you know, glacial.
But what causes that, though, Gadge? Is it just the nature of local government? Is it the fact that you have this sort of really odd relationship between policy and implementation and officers and councillors? Is that at every level?
So I think the officer corps aren't geared up for delivering stuff quickly. It's about risk management, I think. There's a culture of it's unacceptable to fail in local government in the same way it is in startup culture and private sector. I think there's not that sort of safety net for people to be a bit more ambitious. And I think we've got a new CEO now. How many CEOs have we got?
We do have another one starting soon. We've had, we lost Charlie. We then had an interim, Roy, who went off sick, and then we had another interim. So we had interims, and now we apparently are going to get a new one sometime next year.
Right, well, yeah, so I guess obviously that doesn't help an organisation if the person that's running it is being changed. It has no security in their job, right?
Mm.
I think I like to think that we were fairly good in not being as disruptive to the way the council's run from leadership perspective as people maybe wanted us to be, because it wasn't necessarily the right thing for Kingston, though obviously it would have been politically expedient to blame the officer corps for things that I think we are actually responsible for. So things happen slowly, I think, because the officer culture, I think things happen slowly literally because committee meetings take ages to happen. So you have to wait like 6 weeks for the next one.
Yeah.
And then even in those meetings, they're, I think, pointless, because again, nothing's really debated. It's just Lib Dems are giving my speaking notes on what they're meant to say, and our lot say whatever they want, tend to be. it's that there's less formal whipping, at least, in those sort of events. So I think that's just impractical, at least with the cabinet.
I think the trouble is with committees is that at times they're used merely as a vehicle to try and catch out the administration of the time as opposed to try and improve the decision.
Yeah, which I think is the problem, isn't it? It's flawed on two levels. A, you're absolutely right, it should be improving the decision that's been taken on behalf of everyone. But more importantly, no one is listening.
No, exactly.
I can understand a desire to catch the Prime Minister out in PMQs, but to catch the lead member for Regeneration out in a committee meeting of which three people turn up and like 10 people watch online seems like a pretty ridiculous way of spending
a Tuesday evening. Yeah, yeah.
I genuinely think it's a disgrace. I think maybe after I stopped being deputy leader, or even during actually, I just was totally disillusioned with the manner by which we take decisions.
Mm.
And I thought it just makes people have less faith in council as an organisation and institution because it just looks ridiculous.
Agreed. But what about the position Kingston finds itself in now? I mean, what's your reflections on the place of Kingston? I mean, you know.
But obviously, I think we did a few good things. I think one of the things that I liked to think that what I did drove through was the 12 additional policemen for the town centre. Kingston has not, I'm supposed to be clear, Kingston does not have a crime problem as a borough. I think as a town centre it does have a challenge. That challenge is disproportionate because the nature of the town centre is dynamism and then diners of the night economy here. And we had at that time a very vibrant nightclub scene. I don't know what it's like now. A, too old, and B, just less informed. But we had an issue around crime. I think adding the additional police was a good move, and I think it helped definitely the perception of crime as well. But I think people feel... I think in Coombe Hill, one of the biggest things that used to come up occasionally on the doorstep and occasionally at surgeries was that a view that all the police that have to look after Coombe Hill get sucked into the town centre to deal with problems there. So when we get burgled in Coombe Hill, it's because they've been dragged to like fights outside bars and clubs in the town centre, which is not necessarily the case. But the fact that we put more people in the town centre meant that people felt a bit more safe in their own areas as well. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
As I understand it, the Dems are no longer...
No, they're not funding it anymore.
It was match funding, wasn't it? So the mayor.
Yeah, we put half in, the mayor put the other half in.
Which was great, I think, because Boris did for us, and obviously Boris had a commitment to addressing crime across London. That isn't the same with this current mayor. I think for 30 minutes parking.
Yeah, that's good.
For small businesses. The biggest mistake on that, I think, was... obviously, if I'm going to eat, I think I should have delivered it. I think after it wasn't delivered in the first year, I took it off, I think, two of our lead members and delivered it.
This is a classic example of things taking far too long.
I don't know why it took so long.
It was never complicated. It was a commitment.
Back in for
it. Yeah.
I don't know. The biggest mistake on 30 minutes parking that we made, I think, was not promoting it effectively enough across the borough. For which like our comms from council perspective and from administration perspective was weak.
Mm.
And that was the failure of that. I think it's a good thing. I think something that obviously you're very passionate about is development and planning.
Mm-hmm.
I think we permitted a couple of schemes in Kingston Town Centre, I'm particularly thinking of the Eden Quarter scheme, which I think will mean that Kingston will continue for the next decade and hopefully longer to continue to be one of the prime retail locations outside the West End, especially with Westfield as sort of like as a shopping experience. Obviously, I think Kingston has so much more to offer than like essentially an enormous shed.
Yeah.
And I think Eden Quarter will mean that we're a less tired location to go to. I think the St. George's one will bring up that
at the old post office.
Uh, I'll clean that up a bit as well. I think it would be really dynamic and they'll make the experience better. So I think that's something I'm proud of. Obviously, again, I think we permitted far more homes than the Lib Dems did. They did permit the Toby Job site, didn't they?
Just a few months ago, yeah.
So that's, again, another one where they should have just, if they wanted to do it, they should have done it when they're in opposition, I guess. I assume they all banged it through the first time. On that, I think, that's, again, a good example of what we do quite well. I think they came in with, 7% affordable, and to be fair to Councillor Aurora, he led what I sat through, 5 or 6 of them, a very robust sort of negotiations on getting more affordable out of that.
Which has always been my view about this stuff, though, Gaj, isn't it? Because, you know, you can't as a council sit back and just get what you're given. You actually do have to go out and help shape it, and do have to sit down with developers, however much might not want to make sure you're getting what you want out of it.
And that was one of the hilariously counterintuitive things that happened, I think, when we were running the council, where I think when John Tolley got elected, it was he was the saviour for the nighttime economy and the quality of debate, while the people that have development backgrounds on our administration were seen as being in the pockets of developers by getting better deals. I can say it's an absolute fact, there's no one that Lib Dem administration, I don't know the new guys, but definitely from the old lot, who would have negotiated a better affordable package for the council than Roy did on that Toby Jug site. Just a big mistake. One of the things that I really enjoyed doing was the twinning, which I was obviously keen to do with, I think that was again an example. I think there are people who wanted us to do it and to take all the political credit, but I was very keen to work with, I think we got Liz in, didn't we?
Yep.
And sort of asked,
this is with Jaffna.
We asked for Dylan and Jogan to be involved in that process. Actually, I think myself and Roy, who did most of that work, was it was actually a borough thing. Mm. It was Kingston to Jaffna. It wasn't a Tory thing. And that was one thing I was very proud of. And I think the only other thing that was really exciting that we did, which is all you actually, was the biz rates retention.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in some meetings that we had with HMT, Treasury, and DCLG before it became whatever it is now. And people were receptive to it. I remember making pretty robust arguments. And then I remember being at Tory Party Conference and George Osborne announcing it. And I was like, wow. and that was probably... I think that is one of the key sort of policy transformations as the impact on that London sort of bought into it. Which is going to have a massive impact on the way we view our relationship with A, businesses, because the nature of business rates retention in general, but also with being accountable and raising our own revenue and trying to shape our own destiny.
Sure.
Now, how you do that with the pressures on child social care and adult social care and the statutory responsibilities and not be able to raise council tax, obviously is a different problem. But I think that was a good thing that we did. And you probably don't get enough slaps in the back for it.
That's the life. That's the life of politics, isn't it? Gaj, we spent quite a lot of time talking about your reflections on being a councillor and what we've managed to get right in that 4 years when we were in administration. But it's not all good, is it, obviously, because you still get things wrong. So are there any things you can think of particularly that we could have done better? In a sense, you've highlighted some of it, that we didn't implement things fast enough, we didn't get things done quick enough. But that's a constant uphill battle for a local council, I imagine.
I think we did some good things. We didn't do enough good things, and I think some of the things we did very badly was A, we didn't work quick enough. I think in hindsight, we should have transformed the manner by which we take decisions so that we weren't hamstrung by the committee sort of agenda timetable.
Yeah.
So things don't happen quick enough. In general, I think we were incompetent on explaining to the public the financial challenges that local authorities face.
Yeah.
In a way that's like not a lecture on the history of revenue support grant and local government finance settlements. I think that we didn't transform and engage the public enough on things that don't directly impact them. So with the exception of planning, I cannot think of a single committee meeting about major things that would truly high well attended and engaged with.
The trouble is, it's quite difficult to engage people that want to be engaged. I mean, you know, for the vast majority of people who live in the borough, they really couldn't give a tuppence what the hell the council gets up to, could they? They couldn't really, unless something goes wrong, unless their bin doesn't get
collected. Yeah, well, I think that's the thing, right?
It's a challenge.
Therein lies the challenge in so much that we're not talking about anything that anyone cares about, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, we should be talking about the things that people do care about and how we fit into that solution. I remember can we talk about this?
Yeah.
Bernard Hogan Howe?
Yeah.
So one of the most interesting conversations we ever had was with the former commissioner, the mayor, and it was talking about when we think of one of the challenges they have was the impact of mental health on the police and the call outs. We have rolled public health. We had an ambition to view mental health and deal with it differently. And at no point were we collaborating effectively with the police, who are literally next door to us.
Yeah, agreed.
And there's another conversation that's a more red meat Tory about shared assets and the rest of it. So I thought that we weren't collaborative enough with other...
No, I mean, we talked about having a single public service across the borough.
Yeah.
But it's how you then deliver that's really complex and quite difficult, because you're starting to talk about interests and people's pensions if you start merging services together. And I do remember that conversation with Bernard Hogan Howe, where he said, well, I'm not sure I want to move into your Guildhall building because I don't want to get too close to you, because, of course, I have to go around arresting politicians from time to time, which, of course, is an attitude which is going to be quite difficult to break down. Yes.
Yeah. I actually am a massive Hogan Howe fan. I think he was very intellectually capable of having conversations about local government as well, which I thought was very impressed. But that again was we should have been a bit more ambitious. Mm. Now, I think the biggest problem we had within our group was grappling with the idea that you have housing targets and development will happen, and you're only in power not to permit and block, but to shape. You're a place shaper and you're a negotiator. So all you need to do is get the best deal for Kingston. So let's rake in more dosh and let's get more affordable, even though it's not affordable. And I think the reality is that people misunderstood what our role was and thought that we could be the, you know, the blocker and the approver of all planning. And I actually think that is the, strategically, that is the biggest challenge the Lib Dems will face.
Yeah.
I think, what's the mayor's target? What, 1,300 homes?
1,360 something, yeah.
Yeah, so I think if you look at the 32 boroughs and you look at a borough that, from the mayor's perspective, the Labour mayor's perspective, he has no real skin in the game, because he's not getting a big chunk of votes from here. Like, it's on in mayoral elections, Kingston votes for Tory candidate. He hasn't got an incumbent MP. He hasn't got an incumbent council or a chance of winning either, realistically. I think that Kingston's... If I was him, politically, Kingston's the borough that you make an example of.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not permitting enough homes. I'm going to take their planning powers away. At least have that Barney, because...
That is a real risk, of course.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
Particularly if he's not, as you say, if he's not achieving his targets anyway.
I think in his first 2 years,
he's quite good at shifting the blame.
Well, yeah, he's built less homes and permitted less homes than Boris did in his final year. So that's coming from a person who promised us 50,000 homes, though I think in one time he actually said someone 70,000 homes, and promised us 50% affordable. Now, everyone the humblest student of local government will know that 50% affordable is absurd.
Mm.
Unless you're like this, unless your scale and mass is just enormous.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't think they're going to have massive. Kingston hasn't got enough sites strategically to have that sort of quantum. No. Therefore, I've heard you discuss about like knocking down two-story houses, and I just think. And I get where that's
not me. This is the mayor. Yeah, the mayor wants to. Let's be clear.
The mayor's plan for that's just not going to happen, right? So the reality is that Kingston is going to be full well short of his targets.
Yeah.
He's going to be falling even shorter of his targets. And at some point, he has to like at least fight the narrative. And the narrative probably for him is safer just slapping Kingston.
Yeah. Yeah.
Slapping Sutton. Slapping Richmond.
Mm.
And
because he certainly shifted the responsibility onto the outer London boroughs away from the inner London ones. So, they're the ones that are going to get hit, and they're the ones where he doesn't win a mayoral election.
Right? So I think that's where the juice is for him. Now, the only thing that is a challenge for him perception-wise is obviously his ambitions aren't just to be mayor. So, in the reality, Kingston has to, places like Kingston, the voters in Kingston have to become his people too. I think, to be honest, he solves that with his second referendum narrative than he does with anything else, right? So I think that's actually where the Lib Dems would get hit hard. Now the challenge is, will anyone realise what's happened?
Yeah, agreed. Listen, you've strayed into the London mayor there, and you did serve 18 months as my deputy leader, but you had to step down because you decided to go off and get involved in Zach's interesting campaign for mayor. What's your reflections of the mayoral? Because I mean, obviously the mayoral elections are the next big elections in London and in Kingston, providing we don't have any EU elections next year. So the mayoral elections, the next one up. What's your view about that, and where do you think?
I guess
it's heading
from. I think if I were to tell you that that there's a mayoral candidate who comes from a working class background, grew up in a council house to a single parent who spent her entire life working in the NHS. He then fought the adversities of his locality and instead of doing what maybe would be more financially a bigger remuneration, he chose to set up a charity to get people out of violence and gang life into jobs. He then go work in government to try and continue that work, then get elected onto the GLA, a very humble guy with an interesting story. You'd be like, I think a lot of Londoners would be eager to have someone like that as mayor of London. I think the challenge is that he's a Conservative. I think Sean Bailey on paper is a fantastic and amazing guy, and even in person. I think the challenge he has is to what extent is being a Conservative in the mayoral election too toxic for voters who, if you described him, would be quite keen for someone like him to take, especially now, with crime like totally out of control in London. He's, I think, in many ways an antidote to some of the biggest challenges that London faces. So I think Sean's a fantastic candidate and a very exciting candidate. I think the challenge is to what extent will people see him as Sean Bailey.
He's also up against a particularly canny politician, isn't he? I mean,
I think the people that understand about Sadiq Khan is a relentless winner.
Mm.
He won three times as a councillor in Tooting. He then won three times as the candidate in Tooting, which I think each time was target seat. The Conservatives. He then beat Yvette Cooper for the selection of Labour candidate and then won the election. I think he's probably one of the most gifted strategic minds in modern politics.
Mm.
And he has a fantastic team around him. And the fact that he has bungled the administration of TfL and cocked up Crossrail.
Yeah.
And they're totally in the red. There's like 800 million in the red.
Mm-hmm.
He's promised 50,000 homes and is delivering, I think, something like 16,000 He's permitting less than Boris as well, which has got no excuses on permissions. Like, you can make a pretty interesting argument on builds, but not on permissions. And violent crime's up about 40% in London. Now, I don't know how, well, I do know how, but to have a net approval rating of like 11 points while being, from a process perspective, up there with one of the most incompetent mayors, not just in London, but just in general, a metro mayor, I think is an extraordinary testament to his political skill, that people don't seem to be aware of how incompetent he is, and he's very effective at blaming people, be it the government, pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Now, I think what his sort of strategic dead cat is second referendum. He is pinned himself onto that, which is very popular in London and with Remainers, which I think will distract everyone from his actual performance. Now, the reality is that at some point Londoners need to decide whether having a mayor who supports a second referendum is more important than I think it's 120, 125 people being stabbed or shot to death in London, violent crime increasing, moped attacks increasing, knife crime in general increasing, no houses being built. I don't mean like no houses being built for people to buy off plan, like no houses that Londoners can build. Like his housing strapline was homes for Londoners. No bloody Londoners building up.
Exactly.
He's coming anyway. And of some of the major schemes, the percentage affordable on some of them is zero.
Yeah.
Multi-hundred schemes. So this is like an extraordinarily... like if it was a Tory, they would be done.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, let's be honest.
Yeah,
like, hung out. Done. So I don't know how... I don't know how what will happen, but anyone that says Sean Bailey can't win hasn't been a student of global politics for the last 3 years, because anything can happen.
Yeah, anything can happen, yeah. So who knows what the next general election is going to be. Yeah. Gaj, what about you? What are you going to do next? I mean, you were on the council 6 years, you've come off that. You worked at the Conservative Central Office, you've been on the mayoral campaign, you've taken a sabbatical, you've been halfway around the world. You haven't quite made the other halfway around, but there are reasons for that. What are you going to do next?
To be honest, Kevin, I don't know.
Have you got politics out of your blood?
No. I've been offered a handful of jobs, so I'm not entirely sure which one I'm going to take. Obviously, the reason why I've come back is because my wife's broken. So I was trying to work out how I...
A baby gadge.
Absolutely. How I get that balance right of family life and work. One of the things, obviously, having worked with predominantly older councillors is that the vast majority have kids who are older, or they're retired, so I've never had much discussion with fellow councillors about, you know, balancing babies and work. So I don't know what I'll do, but I think I will continue to work in politics. I really enjoy it. It's like enjoying your job is obviously a useful thing to have. In terms of Kingston politics, I think I'm done with Kingston politics. I haven't stopped.
Yeah, I remember saying that once.
I've stopped caring. Like I am, like I do, like I'm passionate about Kingston. I love Kingston. I guess the thing for me in terms of local government is that local government needs to transform.
Yeah.
And the thing that saddens me about Kingston is that I'm fairly certain that the transformation that's required in terms of reimagining service delivery and working with partners to deliver those services, which I think Kingston can be a pioneer, will not happen under the Lib Dems. That's partly because I don't think they necessarily have that same vision of local government, that relationship, and that duty. Also because I think that group is massive. Because like, how many, is it 38, 39?
It was 38 now, there was 39, they've lost four.
Yeah, well that's exactly good, you're going to lose a few, right? But I think the biggest problem you have with that is that you probably have, of that 39, 15 who have been councillors before.
Less than that, I think.
Yeah, and the rest of them will think they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the biggest mistake that happens in local government. I think they should, this is a weird, I think I'd endorse them listening, actually, and spending, letting Liz get on with the job, because Liz actually has done the job before. She's been a counsellor for a long time, and obviously I'm probably the last person she wants endorsing her. But the reality is that one of the biggest mistakes that you see in politics, you see it at local level across the country, national elections, and others, is that people believe their own hype.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily win and lose elections because of your manifesto and how much people enjoy you as a candidate. I think John Tolley's a pretty good example of that. Mm. He had a negligible support as an independent candidate, still as the Lib Dem candidate at a particular time after the general election, where there was an element of, like, I think in Kingston and Richmond, South West London, an element of regret amongst the number of people who tactically voted to have a Conservative government, but now felt bad that got rid of who they regard as fairly effective local MPs.
Mm.
And he came on the back of that, but he isn't actually that popular.
I think for me,
no one is as popular. No one as an independent candidate is more popular than the party. I think David Fraser is a pretty good example of that as well, right? David Fraser was someone who was adored as a Conservative councillor. But when he says independent council, he didn't win.
I think it's also the case, though, isn't it, not true, Gage, that there's also an element to which, however good you sit down and write a local manifesto for local elections, or you keep knocking on doors or deliver leaflets, if the political tide's against you, you're not going to win. I mean, that's the reality of it. It doesn't matter if it's being judged on local issues or not judged on local issues, you're just not going to win. I mean, we experienced that to a certain extent last May.
Absolutely. I think the result in Kingston and Richmond, and the manner in which both those councils were run and for how long they're run, meant that it was impossible to not look at it together and realise that there's an element of Europe being an issue. Now, that it's reminded me when talking about David Fraser, one of my biggest regrets, probably the biggest regret I had as being a councillor, was on recall. What ended up happening was a watered-down version of what I put to group in Cabinet. And one of the things that we didn't put in it, which we 100% should have, was that if someone gives up the whip, that they should trigger an immediate by-election.
Mm.
Because in Mary Clark's case, she was not elected as Mary Clark, she was elected as the Conservative candidate. And I think she should have triggered it out of respect to the electorate when it's giving up the whip.
Mm.
She chose to as well. She should have triggered a by-election. And if she had faith in her own capacity and popularity, she contested as a Kingston resident party, or whatever it was. And she would have been well-received and won had she been popular. But I think there's another count, Lib Dem one right now.
Yeah, there is, yeah.
She got elected to Lib Dem.
Sharon Sumner, yeah. What she's done there is, my understanding is she's not left the party. She's become an independent Lib Dem. Slightly odd, but I mean, it's...
That's just like, I can only imagine that's a whinge at the internal politics of the Lib Dem group, right?
Yeah, well, that's what we gather.
I don't know her, but I do know that Liz Green's been a councillor for a lot longer and has got a pretty good idea of how to get things done in local government. And I think it'd be surprising if she thinks, having done a handful of months, that she knows better.
Mm.
But then, I guess that is...
That's local politics. Yeah. Good. Okay, so you're going to do your other 6 months around the world at some point. Stick around in politics. Have lots of babies.
Hopefully.
And continue to be a Kingston boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Thanks, Kevin. And so that's it for this week from Politics Kingston. We've had an interesting chat with Gage, quite a bit longer than our normal podcast, but I thought, well, you're going to have plenty of time over Christmas and you're going to want to get away from Turkey and people and sit down and maybe just listen to Gage and understand a bit more about what goes on in Kingston from a political point of view. We will be podcasting next week. We'll be doing a roundup of the year and a look forward to the year ahead, which will be quite exciting as well. So have a great Christmas and see you on the other side.